Sorry, I forgot what our show is called.
Oh.
Okay, I remember now.
Wow, we're that old. Wow. That's when you know it's time to wrap up.
That's a mind blank. Okay, I've already done the silence, so I'll just start.
Line.
Okay. That's about it.
All right.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
My name is Ian Boothby. Dave paused a little bit there. He did not remember the name of the show.
I had
a couple of seconds ago. He was trying to remember it, and then it seemed like you stumbled on your name a little bit.
No, I did not.
Are you having a stroke?
No, it was actually, I thought I was being a bit loud.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, hi, everybody. And then I went like, oh, that's a bit loud. So I better quiet down. But while I thought of that, I paused.
Well, what you don't know is Dave and I have been doing this show at the Grand Ole Opry this week. And so Dave always starts with a salute.
That's right.
You know, and
howdy.
Yep. Dave's wearing a baseball cap with the price tag attached. It's adorable.
Thank you.
And when we're there, he's a pickin' and I'm a grinning because I don't play any instruments.
That's right. I'm not actually picking with, I'm actually using a pick.
Yeah, a water pick.
A water pick.
Yeah.
Clean my teeth.
Dave plays a water pick. He sings a song while water picking his teeth.
Do they still sell water picks?
I don't see why they would not.
But why would they?
Wait, why would they? Okay, what has changed between the time they sold water picks and now?
They realized how useless they are?
Well, yeah, but so what? You know, look at all the reach toothbrushes.
There was a general
understanding? Listen, this toothbrush reaches the back of your mouth. Really? Like the other toothbrushes didn't.
Yeah.
Well, this one's at an angle. Still fine. A straight line still reaches every part of my mouth. How about if it's a crookie angle and we've got a little thing in the middle for scraping your tongue? Was not a problem before. You can still brush your tongue. Nothing needed to be done on the toothbrushes.
That's true, but it's hard to find a straight toothbrush now, whereas it's easy to find all kinds of bent ones or ones with
a lot of toothbrushes
weird
used to say they were straight, but you know, they had their own private lives.
There were some pink ones.
Yep. Yeah. Back in the day.
They had colors.
Yeah.
All the colors of the rainbow.
True enough.
You don't want to add to that?
No, I don't think there's anything to add to
okay.
that.
Okay. Did you say your name?
Yeah, I did.
Oh,
Ian Boothby, that's okay. my name. Did you forget my name again? Are you having a stroke?
I do. I am cooking toast.
Okay. Now, toothpaste that maybe no longer exist. AIM, does that still exist?
I don't know.
Close-Up, does that still exist?
I don't think so.
McLean's.
I really don't think that...
McLean's, for those, I don't know if our American listeners or those of our troops overseas listening, remember there used to be a toothpaste called McLean's, and if you were poor, you would buy just a small tube of toothpaste. That's fine.
Yeah.
And then if you were really poor, you'd buy McLean's toothpaste, which mm-hmm. is also the name of a magazine
yeah.
that we have in town. And what they do with the magazines is those they didn't sold, they would grind up into a paste, and that would become McLean's toothpaste.
I always thought they were related.
Yeah.
I always thought it was
That's
weird.
That's what that it was, because it tasted like newsprint.
It seemed wrong that there was a McLean's toothpaste and a McLean's magazine.
Yeah, and there was McLean Stevenson as well, which also used to bother
That's
you.
Also wrong.
Luckily, he's dead now.
Well,
Rest
I killed him.
Peace.
I killed him because it bothered me so much.
And you got a taste for it, and then you waited it out, and then this week you killed Conrad Bain as well.
Yes, old sitcom stars, look out.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Conrad Bain. He outlived everybody, didn't he?
No,
except
no.
for Charlotte Ray.
Willis.
Is he still around?
Todd Bridges is still around.
Is Todd Bridges still alive?
Todd Bridges is still alive.
I'd need confirmation
all
on
of
that.
All of them have had unfortunate lives, as we know, except for Conrad Bain.
No, he was living large.
He had
a Highlander-type situation where everyone that passed away, he got stronger and grew
is
more
that,
hair.
Is that how it worked?
That's why you never saw him in the later years, because it was obvious that he had a full, beautiful head mm-hmm. of hair. He was actually the bass player for The Who in the last years of his life.
Is that right?
I do not know if Todd Bridges is still around.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is.
All right.
Because the reason I know that is because all the RIPs I saw for Conrad Bain mm-hmm. said, Willis is still around. Willis is still alive.
Well, sure, so they that don't made mean me think Bruce Willis.
They may have meant Bruce Willis.
Right.
They may have meant Willis Chamberlain, the famous...
person that doesn't have that name.
The basketball star.
Yes. Wilt Chamberlain.
Willis, the Wilt, the Stilt Chamberlain.
Wow, that's a lot of names.
That was his nickname. Wilt wasn't his real name.
His nickname was Willis Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain. What was his actual longer name then? What was his Christian name?
Norbert.
He was named after that movie.
Yes.
The Eddie Murphy movie.
His parents went ahead in the future.
Right.
Ahead. They went back to the future.
Mm-hmm. Here's my question about Eddie Murphy. Has he now done more movies where he's in drag than not movies where he's in drag?
he's also done more people in drag than he's done movies that are not in drag.
Ooh, because the transvestite.
That was a little topical reference to an incident that happened several years ago.
Could not be more topical.
Yep.
Yeah,
Right on top of it.
Wait for the Hugh Grant jokes.
Right.
They're coming soon.
That's right. In 9 months.
Damn, I wish
in
I
nine
could.
Months.
I know. I got the reference to the movie. Good. I was just trying to remember the name of the lady who was involved. It was something like, I was going to say Sapphire, but I think she wrote Precious. Then I want to say Precious, but I think she wrote Sapphire.
She wrote Push.
She wrote Push.
That's right.
Which is a novel by Hugh Grant.
It's Precious.
Exactly. What we're saying, folks, is we're tired.
You're tired.
I am tired.
I am disabled.
You claimed to be tired earlier. You said you had a very bad night's sleep.
I had a bad
night's
sleep.
But it's and now you're playing Johnny Wide Awake. You're playing the Wide Awake card.
I'm drinking Coke from a can.
Okay. That's how you're supposed to do it.
The aluminum particles have awakened me.
All right. Well, why'd you have a bad night's sleep last night?
It's related
guilt
to... No.
Over murder?
Of Conrad Bain?
Yes.
No, I'm perfectly fine with it. Mm. I did sleep uneasily after I killed... the other guy whose name we mentioned, who I can't remember now, McLean Stevenson. And Gordon Jump.
Yeah, and when he killed McLean Stevenson, he went, "Goodbye, Larry." Stab. Which, if you remember that he used to star in a sitcom called Hello, Larry, might make you smile a little bit. Probably not. Wouldn't make you laugh.
Or not.
Maybe not. Okay, go ahead. Actually, tell me about your night's sleep.
Well, I walked into the kitchen and I said, "Everyone, I have to tell you something. I'm afraid McLean Stevenson... crashed his helicopter." they're like, "How did you know? It hasn't been on the news yet." Well,
yeah.
And much collar pulling.
It was a dramatic scene in that in MASH when they did that. By the way, Radar, people are busy right now. Maybe they don't need to go into like crushing morning tears when they're doing delicate surgery. Maybe now's not the time to be doing this at all. You stupid idiot! And also, hey, Radar, put on a mask.
No, I'm not putting on a mask. So I'm sad.
Okay, we're all sad. Sad things
when you're
happen.
Sad, your germ count drops dramatically.
Right. Mm-hmm. I never quite got the McLean Stevenson's character on MASH anyway. Like,
why not?
Am I supposed to like him or not? Like, he just seems like a dumb guy. When you have a character on a show that's just...
He's sort of ineffectual.
He's ineffectual, dumb, but he's also dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like...
Is he dumb?
Yeah, I think he's kind of dumb.
How could he be dumb? He's a colonel. He's a surgeon.
Well,
Isn't he a surgeon?
Yeah, he is a surgeon, but everyone... Frank's a surgeon, and he's not that bright.
Well, no. You don't have to be bright to be a surgeon. You just have to have a father who's a doctor who can afford to send you to medical school for extra long time.
Okay. But just whenever you have a dumb character in a show, unless they're completely, you know, hilariously crackin' wise all the time, when you have a dumb character in a show that's sort of semi-serious, you gotta get that dumb guy out of there. You don't want him around. What's the point of that? You know, unless you're going like, hey, the military's all messed up and guys like this are in charge. I get that. That's fine. And that plays well for a movie. But if you're in a series, that gets old fast because this guy should not be in charge. And that becomes apparent. And you're like, this guy should go. Even if he's a lovable loser, he should go because things need to be done.
But you can say that.
I did.
But when they introduce...
I think I proved that I could say
that. When they introduce the Colonel Potter character,
yes.
He comes in like a hard ass.
Yes, he does.
But it's not very long until he...
And everyone forgets that he was on the show earlier as a different character who was insane.
Was he?
Yes, he was. He was like kind of a crazy guy who was on the show like in maybe the second season.
Oh, so they were saying to him, how come you're a doctor now? Weren't you a policeman before?
Pretty much.
Because he was in Dragnet.
Yeah, that is true.
No, but when his character first appears, he's like a hard ass, right? He's like, I'm here and I'm going to settle your guy's hash.
Yeah, that's right. That.
That's the kind of expression
settle
they had to
use. Settle
your hash, yeah.
Right. Because they were making money selling hash.
I thought they were eating hash in the cafeteria.
Oh, they wish. Food there was terrible, apparently.
Yeah. They ate a lot of shit on a shingle.
Okay.
Which is beans on toast.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
It does sound terrible. There's nothing worse than wet stuff on bread. I think we've covered that before.
You know what? If you want to have that, say that's what you want to have. I don't want to tell you what to do, England. But here's the thing. You like a little beans on toast?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what you're going to do. Put your beans down. Put the toast on top. Toast stays dry.
Oh.
And then you have the same flavor. You can cut through the toast, scoop it up with your fork as you would.
The problem is you have changed the nomenclature.
Mm.
It is now toast on beans.
Nomenclature was the landlord on Three's Company.
That's true.
Okay.
He was the one who leered at them all the time?
That's right.
Okay. That's why the show was created by Norman Lear.
It was not.
It wasn't?
No.
But he created that show, didn't he?
He created all British shows, yes, that they then adapted.
Oh, I was thinking of the... Oh, okay.
Were you thinking All in the Family?
I was thinking...
Were you thinking The Jeffersons? Were you thinking Maude?
I wasn't thinking...
Were you thinking Good Times?
No.
Any of those would be correct.
I was thinking Till Death Do Us Part. Yeah.
Norman Lear is not British, so no. 1 foot in the grave.
Steptoe and son. Rising damp. I was thinking of, yeah. So, when Colonel Potter comes on the show.
Right.
When Colonel Harry Potter comes on the show. Harry Potter.
Wait.
Oh, it's Henry
that
Potter.
That can't be right. No, that's not correct.
It was Henry Potter.
Okay.
When he comes on the show, he's like a hard ass.
Yeah. I was going like, how did we miss that all
but
this
in
time?
In a relatively short time, since the show ran for 27 years, yeah. In a relatively short time, he is one of the guys. He's just another ineffectual doofus, just like everyone else in the show.
Do you know what, though? No, I don't think he was an ineffectual doofus. I thought he got the job done when he needed to. What I think he did was he came in and he saw that what they were doing worked and was saving lives.
Yeah, that's what.
And as a doctor
He discovered what Colonel McLean Stevenson already knew.
No, I don't think Colonel McLean Stevenson had a choice. I think Colonel McLean Stevenson just had to be the dumb guy, and Radar kept tricking him. And Radar was a weird character. He's supposed to be this innocent, but he was really creepy at times.
Yeah,
I don't. Radar, weird character. Then he went off on his own spinoff and wanted to kill himself. Suicidal. Weird.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was how the Walter, and it had the asterisks in between his name. Bad choice. Bad choice, TV.
Said it made him more like a robot.
He went back home, and much like, sadly, people are now, out of the military, he lost his farm and just decided he wanted to end his life. But before he did that, something happened, and he ended up becoming a cop in a small town.
Oh.
But it just seemed weird that, like, yeah, he thought, yep, well, time to suck a gun. You know, it's just like, wait a minute, whoa, but played for laughs.
Really? Because it's so hilarious?
Yeah.
Did they show him going to kill himself?
I'm not sure.
With the gun in his mouth? With the laugh track?
I have to go to YouTube and check that out. I don't know when they did Aftermath, if they referred to that and just went, hey, remember that time Radar tried to kill himself, but it became a cop? But okay. No, it's just the three of those guys.
And later on,
Mulcahy and Potter and Jamie Farr's character hanging out.
Clinger. Later on in the series, they showed him with like
he was a bit of a clinger, I gotta admit.
They showed him with the barrel in his mouth, and then it pulls back, and he's using it as a straw to drink a grape knee-high.
I thought you were going to go, after he shoots himself in the head, he goes like, man, that wasn't painless. They were wrong.
Suicide isn't painless.
Yeah.
But it does bring on many changes.
Sure does.
Yeah.
And you can take or leave it as
I
pleases.
I can take or leave it as I please.
Now, you had a bad night's sleep last night. Explain.
Because I put my back out yesterday.
Oh, what were you doing?
Well, it's strange. I don't know how it happened. I was at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
I was lifting weights.
Sure.
But I wasn't lifting heavy weights.
Right.
In fact, I was barely lifting weights. I did three pull-ups, like three pull-up sets. Mm-hmm. Where you wear pull-ups.
Yeah, you wear the pull-up diapers. Yep.
Because
sometimes you pee a little when you're
lifting
weights.
You do, because you're straining.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I just let a little bit go.
Yep.
No, I was doing pull-ups like,
there's
you know, where
no
you kind
shame
of
in that. There's no shame in that.
You have your arms sort of wide.
Yeah.
Not close up, but far apart.
Yep.
And you pull yourself up. And I did some of those. Like I did three sets of those. Then I moved over to do some deadlifts, which are for your back.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't even lifting heavy weights. I was just doing a warm up. And then next thing I know, I'm like, bent over like an old man, not able to straighten up.
Yep.
And so I.
Do you get assistance from somebody or just eat it yourself?
I just ate it.
Yeah.
I nonchalantly.
Casually bent over, stroll like a question mark towards.
Well, I put the weights away.
Sure you do.
I put the weights away.
Wipe them off.
Well, because, you know, you're at the gym, you should put your weights away.
Absolutely, when you're in an incredible amount of pain and should be at the doctor's. Yep.
Remember,
everybody, if you're having a heart attack, put everything away first. You want a clean home.
You want a clean home. Well, before you have the heart attack, make sure the home's clean.
No one judges you more than a paramedic.
Oh, yeah.
They come in, tisk, tisk.
That's right.
Take pictures of your home, laugh at it later with the other paramedics, Johnny and whatever the other guy's name is, Johnny Gage and
Roy.
Roy DeSoto.
Yeah. Glad I could help you. So then I was in a lot of pain.
It is painful.
It was very painful.
I went through the same thing about 3 to 4 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, here's what I was doing. I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut my toenails. Let me just bend over 3 inches, and there it goes. Nothing. Like, what the hell? Like, again, it was like, there's no goddamn reason for this.
No.
At all, just like, ah!
Yeah.
Oh, that's how it's going to be.
It sounds like I was doing a lot.
Sure does.
I was at the gym, but I do that all the time. So
yeah.
It's not like it was new or I had gone there the first day. It was like my New Year's resolution and I just ran straight to the gym and started
lifting
up. It's
random. It's random.
I guess
this
is
what you get when you're after 40. We're not going to be talking about that movie, by the way. We're not going to be talking about that anymore. We're done. But when you are physically after 40, your body goes random. and you'll do something. You'll mm-hmm. like reach for a glass. Oh, there goes the elbow. It'll just like random. That's yeah. how it goes.
Wow.
You know, later on you get brittle bones and, you know, hey, come on, don't roll down the stairs like that. That's why you did that. But, you know, it's just on random it's now. So enjoy the rest of your life.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the reason I had a bad sleep then was because I was unable to move in bed.
Mm.
So I lay for several hours on one side of me and I couldn't move from that side. So I woke up and then I had to squinch over to the edge of the bed, let my legs drop down the side so I was kneeling on the floor.
Yeah.
And then using the bed, lift myself upright.
Yeah, it's good fun when you have to
and
do
then,
that.
And then, I don't know who did it, one of my daughters, Millis or Phyllis.
Right.
I think Phyllis. Mm-hmm. Millis, left the light on down in the living room, so I had to hobble down the hallway, turn off the light, and then go back. But I was able to, like, get into bed a little bit better than my first attempt. Because mm-hmm. I learned that once I was in bed laying down, I couldn't move myself over. So when I sat down, I sat farther onto the bed, and then I was able to lay down without being so close to the edge as I was the
first
time.
You sound like you're a Tetris piece. You're just trying to arrange yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And once I was, but unlike a Tetris piece, once I was laying down, I wasn't able to turn mm-hmm. my, so I just.
And if you lined up with your wife, both of you would vanish.
Yeah.
You would form a straight line.
Gone. So, ooh, that's bad then. No more canoodling.
No, you can spoon.
Oh, okay.
You just can't.
Straighten up.
When you canoodle, do you form a straight line together? Do you lie head to head?
We do.
Okay.
A straight line? Oh, no, but we just form a straight line and lay like smack together.
Oh, smack together. No,
perfectly
that's okay.
Straight.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Isn't that bad?
No, not on, no, because the biggest piece is four squares. So four square on four square will not make you vanish.
Oh, okay.
Four square lying next to four square, I think could vanish.
Okay. Well, I'm taller than my wife. She's actually just three square.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what you got is a Sonic the Hedgehog thing going on. And she would be Miles, Tails, I don't know.
Did you ever play Foursquare when you were in school?
Is that the one that's got four squares
and
you
throw
a ball?
Yeah.
I saw it played. I believe I played it once and it wasn't for
what
me.
What were the rules?
Well, okay. First of all, Foursquare is forewarned. So I think they would yell, ball a coming! And then they would throw the ball into your square. And then I think you had to get online and say where you are in the world.
Is that right?
Yes.
That is complicated, especially then. Because there was no online. Basically, you had to get
a walkie-talkie.
You had to go onto a clothesline in the neighborhood and put something on it with a clothespin.
We did have bulletin boards, didn't we then? Wasn't there internet bulletin
boards?
No,
there was no bulletin boards.
Wait, what age are we talking about?
Well, I'm in elementary school.
Oh, you're in elementary school?
Yeah, I don't remember Foursquare outside.
Boy.
No one was playing Foursquare at high school.
No, not at high school. I'm just trying to remember when, because my dad used to go on internet bulletin boards, and that was with our Atari 800 computer.
Yeah, but I don't remember hearing about those until the early 90s, right?
You know what? I'm gonna say when I was 14, we had internet bulletin boards. So you're correct in your elementary school thing, but...
14?
I believe so, yeah.
What year is that?
Oh, boy. What are you doing to me?
Okay.
What are you doing to me? What are you doing to me?
Don't worry about it.
What the hell are you doing to me?
You are the one
who
always...
Why are you trying to make me look like Johnny Jackass in front of these nice people? Making me do math. What the hell?
You're the one who always gets mad at me. You're able to tell me how old I am in grades. So what grade are you when you're 14?
When I'm 14?
Yeah.
That would be grade 9.
So what year was that?
That would be, 80. Well, I don't know. Why? Why are you doing this to me? Why would you do this to me?
I'm just trying to help.
You know?
Just trying to help you.
Oh, my God. Look, people do not listen to this show for math. They listen to us to make fun of Judd Apatow movies and
all?
Emergency. And to listen for when the sirens go by so that they can have a nice drink.
Okay.
Okay.
Or when we mention our childhood, which we did. And so you're
allowed to everybody have a drink. Take a drink. We mentioned our childhood.
Yeah.
There you are.
Foursquare.
There you go. And there you go. Normally, by the way, hey, we're going on tour. I'm going to mention this mid-show.
We're going on tour.
You and I are going on tour.
Okay.
But our tour will take place in about a 6-block radius, almost here. Sneaky Dragon is going live. We're going to be going live at two different comic book conventions. One is Fan Expo. And how big is Fan Expo, Dave?
Fan Expo is huge.
It's so big.
Stan
Lee is going to be there.
Wow. It's official.
Will come.
Vancouver has a comic book convention like never before.
That's right. And here's the guess. Here's all the guess. Stan Lee and us.
That's it.
I think there might be some
a
other people.
A comic book convention like never before.
We're going to be doing a Sneaky Dragon there. We're also going to a thing called VanCaf, which is a comic book convention where you drink coffee.
Yes.
Everyone has to have a cup of coffee and you read a comic book.
Yeah.
And then we'll also be there and we'll also be doing we'll be doing our thing. We don't know how to do it, though. We don't know what we're going to be doing, like, live, how this is going to work.
We have no idea.
None.
It's much like the rest of the shows that we do.
Yeah.
We have no idea what we're doing. We freeball it,
and there we go.
We freeball it.
I wish I'd seen, like, movies this week or something, but I've had such wicked insomnia. I had wicked insomnia. Like, basically,
doesn't that let you watch more movies?
No, because you are lying in bed going, come on. And then in the next day, you're so stunned that you're just like, oh, fucking, I don't think I should go to the motion pictures. And then in the last 2 days, I've been able to get sleep. But I'm
okay.
Okay, here's what it's been like. When I had the insomnia, it was like
You're awake all the time?
Sort of.
Okay.
But you're lying in bed and you go, I've forgotten how to go to sleep. Like, you're just getting more and more tired. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is normal.
Yeah.
You've got to all the thoughts you normally would have that would lead you then to sleep. But no dice. Just like, it just doesn't happen. Like, that one little click that goes like, and now off to dreamland we go, just does not happen. And it's just like, oh, what have I forgotten? What if there's a part of your brain that's the part of your brain that does that, and that part don't work no more? I think that's what's happened. It's just not happening.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it's not the worst. Worst is being on fire.
Being on fire and being able to sleep.
Yeah, a guy who's like on fire
going like,
oh, insomnia is the worst.
Yeah.
And then I have for the last 2 days, but now when I wake up, I just want to go to sleep again. Like, it's the reverse. It's just like the waking up thing now doesn't work. It's just like, you know that thing where you wake up and you go like, oh, well, it's time to wake up. Well, I feel awake now. Now here I'm getting more and more awake, and here you go. It's like, no, it's just like, oh, when's that next sweet sleep? When's that sleep? And it doesn't matter. Like, you get like 8 hours sleep, you get 12 hours sleep, doesn't matter. It's just like, more sleep, please. More pie, please. Sweet sleep pie.
Now you have exsomnia.
Oh, that is a good name for it.
Yeah.
Dave is a doctor, by the way.
Yes.
If you want to write in, by the way, my microphone is now going all higgly-piggly. I'm going to have to hold this.
Is the tightening thingy not working?
The tightening thing does jack and also shit. And this one does jack and squat because it's cleaner than the other one. Yeah. Everything on the microphone now that can be turned is just for no reason.
Wow.
Well, by the way, if you want to phone in Dave with your medical problems, he will answer them. Or you could just write them to our Facebook page.
Write them right away, please.
Now, he's not...
Write them right away.
He's more a Dr. Seuss doctor than a I studied for 8 years doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
He will solve your problems in rhyme.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, if I was to say I have insomnia, how would you solve that problem in rhyme?
I would say, Ian, you have insomnia. You should play the bimnomnia.
Well, that's good, because Dr. Seuss can just make up shit.
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm a Dr. Seuss doctor. I don't have to think about
it. He was one of the smartest poets, which was just like, I'm making up fucking words.
Well, it seemed
kind of... Who else did that? Shakespeare, by the way. Shakespeare would just make up a damn word. You go like, oh, wow, how do you get all this iambic pentameter going on? I'll tell you how. You make up a bunch of words.
But you know...
Made up about 1,200 words.
Here's the thing, though. I can think of two words right off the top of my head that rhyme as instruments. Guitars and sitars. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to have tin paddles and bin battles rhyme. You know what I mean?
Except it's more fun to draw. Like,
yeah,
if
I guess that's it.
Because he drew them, right?
The dinfoozles.
You
and
had
the
to draw. If you had to draw a sitar or you had to draw a bimbazzle, no one's going to go, you drew a bimbazzle wrong.
It's true.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true.
You draw a cat, doesn't look anything like a cat. Put a hat on him. There you go. Now you make $1 billion.
We had some friends who I will put into the category of redneck. If you can have that category in Canada,
I think you can.
They would fit into that category.
We have a sun; it can burn your neck. I think that makes sense.
Okay, and so they were. We went over to visit them, and they had some young children, and they thought it would be a good idea to get some Dr. Seuss books for their kids.
Nice.
To help them read. You know,
I'm all for it.
Learn the joys of reading.
Those are the I can read by myself books.
Maybe, but I think they were reading them to
Then they
kids.
Weren't reading the front of the fucking books, because it says, I can read by myself. Mom, Dad, leave. Do you read the front of the book? The second you can read the front of the book and go like, hey, Mom, Dad, it says I can read by myself.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're terribly sorry. We will leave the book with you, and then we'll see you in 5 years. There's enough money on the counter to buy food.
Enjoy yourself. So they had one of his books, and they were sorely disappointed. They were like complaining about it. It's called There's a Wasit in My Closet.
And oh, it was about a gay wasit.
It's that's right. There's
a wasit in the closet.
There's a wasit in the closet.
And he's got quite the beard. The wasit in the closet. What is he afeard? He's afeard of scrutiny. He's afraid of scorn. Unfortunately, this is the way that he was born.
That's right. There's a wasit in my closet. There's a bitchin' in the kitchen. But
there's a homophobe in my bathrobe.
Their objection to it was that the words were made up, that they weren't real words that they were using.
They also hated one fish, two fish, red fish, Jew fish, but for racist reasons.
I love one fish, one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. The actual book. I think that's great literature.
Okay. I wouldn't want to throw any fake Jewish things on any Dr. Seuss books. But anyway, the Sneetches is a good book.
Is that fake Jewish?
I would think that one was about...
I don't think so.
Really? So you got a star on your belly.
Yeah. It's more about consumerism.
Really? You think about consumerism? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because there's a guy who comes to town.
Yeah.
And he's selling the stars. And that makes the other one special than the other plain-bellied
Sneetches,
right?
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that.
And then the other Sneetches, then everyone has stars and he's able to...
I've heard some Semitic things about Sneetches, but I can't look it up right now because you will not let me access the internet.
Well, because what are you going to do? We sit here while you do...
No, there's no way of pausing this. There's no way, by the way, of pausing anything on the internet.
You finished over there, Ian?
We do the show live.
He's just reading the whole story of the Sweet Sneetches people.
All right.
Found it online, and now he's reading it.
So they disliked that there was no, that there was just made them up words.
Yeah, and they thought that was bad.
Well, let me say why they're wrong.
Because there's no such thing as a wubbard.
Okay, well,
that would be in your cupboard.
But you're not reading the books to learn things that exist. What you're reading the book is to learn how to read.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? Most of your words as a kid are words you have not seen before.
Yes.
So if all you're trying to do is learn how to pronounce letters and vowel, you know, consonants and vowels together,
yeah,
and make things make sense. So
and
yeah,
have fun while you do it.
Have fun while you do it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, you're fine. That's fine. They were absolutely wrong.
Well, you know, just
did you break off the friendship?
Just ignorant. We never pursued.
I don't think they were ignorant. Pursued. I think they were ignorant.
They're ignorant. Yeah, they were rednecks.
Well, no, not all rednecks are.
Yes, they are.
You know what? Some of them make moonshine stills, much like doctors on MASH. Are the doctors on MASH ignorant because they make moonshine stills? No, sir. Then your hillbilly friends are
different.
Not either.
That's different.
They've got their cement pond.
You don't define someone as a redneck because they have a moonshine still.
You kind of do.
No, you don't.
Oh, you got a moonshine still? What are you? Yep, the upper crust?
So you're telling me...
You got moonshine still on a goat.
You're telling me that...
Oi polloi.
A guy who has a baseball cap, wears overalls,
mm-hmm,
has cars in his yard up on blocks.
This sounds like you at the Grand Ole Opry right now.
Has moonshine.
Dave did just come back from the Grand Ole Opry, so this is why he's getting so
sensitive. Has a moonshine still,
mm-hmm,
that he drives around in a fast car, escaping the treasury agents.
Right.
That person is a redneck to you.
Well, he might be a redneck if.
Man, that was the longest setup. No, I just don't think, because I think there's a
difference. If his birth control method is shame, he might be a redneck.
I'm going to throw a different concept at you. Ready for it?
Okay. I'm a snob.
The genteel poor. Like, I think you can be poor.
The genital poor?
No, not genitally poor.
Okay.
The genteel poor.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, you're educated,
mm-hmm,
but you just don't have a lot of money. There's a difference between being an ignorant savage.
That's me most of my damn life.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So are we talking about ourselves right now?
Yes, we are.
Okay, that's
And are you
going to
call yourself a redneck?
By the way, everybody, speaking of rednecks and booze, Siren's going back by, so please take a drink.
Take a drink. Have a drink on us.
Wait, I hope that's not revenuers.
Quick, get into the souped-up car I have hidden behind this haystack.
All right. Oh, I wish I had guns. Damn you, Obama. Damn you, Obama. I don't know if I'd call myself genteel, though.
That was my banjo.
My genteel. You ever see Genteel Ben?
He drinks his tea with his pinky out.
Mm-hmm. He's the more disturbing bear is Genital Ben.
He devours his prey with his pinky standing upright.
Did you ever read the Dr. Seuss
Genital
book?
Ben.
Did you ever read the Dr. Seuss book Gentile Ben? Now that one.
That one was anti-Semitic?
Yes. It was an anti-Semitic bear called Gentile Ben.
Do you know which book was a book about Jews?
In
Dr. Seuss universe was the Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Okay, you can take a long drink if you want, but you're still going to have to follow up on this.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to follow up on it. You're just going to stand right there.
So it's the Jews down in Jewville liked Christmas a lot? That makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, how did we start this conversation?
I don't think we should go anywhere.
I don't know where we're going with this. You know what? We really got a bit of a tar baby here as far as offensiveness. Wait, did I say tar baby? What am I talking about? What's happening?
Are you saying I should put a nickel in the hate crime jar?
I think you should.
Tink, tink.
That's the first nickel in the hate crime jar of the year.
Yeah.
Hooray!
We kind of lost the hate crime jar. I thought I'd bring it back.
Yeah. And then at the end of the year, we buy something to celebrate tolerance.
That's right. White sheets.
What?
What?
Okay.
Did I say something?
I have no idea if you did. Anyway, the important thing to remember is...
maybe I'll pause the show and rewind it so we can hear.
Okay.
And while I'm doing that, you can go read the Sneetches.
Okay.
You know, last show we got into a bit of a conversation near the end of the
We had two topics.
It sounds like I edited the show and I suddenly do that, right?
Well, ever notice that when you're listening? Especially after you go on an anti-Semitic rant.
I did not go on an anti-Semitic rant. You suggested that Sneetches was Jewish.
Huh?
Anyway,
what's that? What about the World Banks? What about Hollywood run by the Grinch?
Do you know the best Dr. Seuss book? If I Ran the Circus. That is great.
It's a pretty good book.
Because it's got a through line. Because it's so great because everything he wants to do in the show, in his circus, he has this poor fellow doing for him. And it's just, and this guy's reactions in each picture to the impossible things he's having to
that
do.
That was the Dr. Seuss book that was larger than a normal Dr. Seuss book.
There's a lot of them like that you could buy.
Right.
Horton Hears a Who, McGillicuddy's Pool, you know, Sneetches and other stories.
Right.
You know?
Now, Sneetches get stitches, I've heard, by the way. They rat on the mob.
Sneetches get stitches.
Yeah. Okay. It's about the mob and why you should rat on them. One of my favorites, just actually in terms of art, is and to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street. Beautiful art in that one. Really gorgeous.
Yeah, it's nice.
Anyway, last show, as you were saying, you promised to talk about two separate topics. We ran out of time. I remember one topic was...
vaginas and monologues.
That's right.
Two separate topics.
One was...
that should never be together.
Comedians in cars.
Yeah.
Getting coffee. And what was the other one?
Sleepwalk With Me.
Sleepwalk With Me. Okay, well, let's start with Sleepwalk With Me and we'll work our way to...
Because you were so excited about that movie.
I liked it a lot, yeah.
And we kind of covered a lot of it. Like, you know, because I mentioned it, then you dug quite deeply into my limited interest in the film. So...
You don't like films that are in color. You don't like films with male leads.
I'm not, okay.
The word Birbiglia bothered you.
Every time they said his name, I just I shivered.
It reminded you of a social disease you had as a teenager.
Yeah.
You got the Birbiglias.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. No, it was an interest. It was a good film.
Leave it at that.
To a point.
And that point was 2 minutes before the end.
One thing that's interesting about the movie is there's a scene where he says to you, the audience, he says, "Now remember, you're on my side."
Yeah.
As he's about to do something that's kind of bad. But I have to admit that I wasn't on his side.
You shouldn't be.
I wasn't on his side at all. And I didn't feel like on his side even before that moment.
The actress playing his girlfriend in there is so likable.
Yeah.
That you're just like, well, you're an idiot. You should go for her. She's great.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. What's your problem?
It's hard to show a relationship like that because... Yeah.
There's no obvious, clearly you should break up.
Yeah, because why? Because she's good looking,
but why
she likes to do it.
Why they're breaking up though is because he's changing. Like he's changing. He's going and following a different path, which is I think why a lot of couples do break up. Not because one person is bad or something terrible. It's just you grow, you change, and you got different goals.
But don't you think that person can grow and change with you? I mean, in the
not if you want to have a lot of sex with waitresses he wanted to.
Yeah, well, that's a bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's not growing and changing. That's just lowering your standards.
No, that's a huge thing that I've seen with people that get a little bit, a little taste of fame.
Okay.
Like there's two things. Like I've worked as a road comic in the past. And when you're on the road, first of all, just if you're in northern anywhere and you say, "I'm from the city," one, people either go, "Fuck you," or two, "I want to fuck you."
Yeah.
Because you are a little bit of the dream that they have of, "I'm going to get out of this town at some point."
Okay.
But here's the guy who might, you know, even if you're not, even if there is no fulfillment of that, you are from the outside. You are the guy with the British accent who just came in. You are that. You are the new. And so, and if you add to that you were just on stage and did well and made a room full of people laugh, Oh, my Lord, is it easy to get laid in a small town. It's so easy. And if you're that kind of guy who is really uncomfortable and went through his life, oh, I don't know, and then all of a sudden girls are like, hey, how's it going? And especially in that case where he has the waitress come on to him really hard,
yeah,
that happens. That happens. That's in no way a fantasy. That's just like, yep. And the waitress is there. They just know what they want. And there you go. And you're like, I'm not used to. Okay, here we go. And
so,
yeah.
So what I hear you saying is that once we start doing the live Sneaky Dragons, my marriage is doomed. That's what you're saying?
I'm saying a person is as faithful as their options. Someone said that to me once. And I went, not at all. That's completely wrong.
As faithful as their options.
It's completely wrong. I know. Wow. I've heard a lot of married guys justify things by that, though.
Okay.
And I've seen a lot of married guys on the road not be that married on the road.
Yeah.
But I honestly, there's no reason I wouldn't say, you know, things happened in the past that but they never have when I've been involved in a relationship.
See, the reason I was thinking about them growing together is because she's incredibly supportive of him. And incredibly helpful to him, mm-hmm. pushing him forward in his career. You know, and it seems so unfair that then he just leaves her behind so he can have sex with the road waitress.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, so right away, you're not on his team. You see right away that this person is, you know, behaving in a honorable way.
He's also found his obsession, which is like her. It looked like her character, you know, she wants to have a family and mm-hmm. she wants to settle down and grow. And like, if you have a family, you can't really, it's very, very difficult to be road dude.
Yeah.
You can't be out and about.
That's sort of, it's not explicit that she wants that. I mean, he's the one who's suggesting it mm-hmm. because he's trying to assume what she wants.
Right.
You know, when you see them together, she's pushing him to a career. She's not telling him that he can't go on the road and that he should be home and have a job.
She plays it realistic. Unfortunately, I think like the father in there is just sitcom broad, like way too, why don't you get there? Settle down. How long you been going out for? Seven years? That's ridiculous. Let me tell you. It's just like the guy would fit in on Anyone Loves Raymond or blah, 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 blah. Yeah. It's just like, okay, fuck off, Dad. Fuck off, Dad. Get out of here, Dad. Carol Kane's character is so weird that I actually buy her as a real person.
Okay.
I buy that. And I
his
really
mom. Buy. Carol Kane plays his mom.
That's right. And I really buy his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it really came across as realistic to me, because they're to the surface, there is no reason why you would break up with her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like, this is a bad choice. But I can see as an artist, when you find your art, you become so obsessed with it. Like, the sex is a nice extra thing. By the way, this thing will get you laid like nobody's business. But, like, just this is what you love. And you have your
talking
love.
Talking about stand-up comedy.
Comedy, yeah. Comedy. You're like, oh, fuck, this is. And you almost at that point can't serve two masters at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just too, you can't like have this life over here that you're tending to while your other life is the road, because at that point in your career, it's going to be road for years.
Yeah.
In fact, it might be road forever. He didn't want to be grounded. He wanted to be out and doing this thing. And I completely understood that. And I've seen it, you know, dozens of times with people, you know, when they find their thing, it all fucking changes. It mm-hmm. all fucking changes. And so, that worked for me in that. But I can see, like, just watching it, you're like, why the hell? And even, like, me watching it, I'm just like, you know, you can't do both. Like,
but what I'm saying, though, is I understand his dilemma. But what I'm saying is the way the film presents it, it's hard to see his dilemma because she is so appealing.
Right, which is why he has to say, you know, remember, you're on my side. Because clearly by this point, we are not on your side. And also, you're dumb for not getting the help you need with the sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're ignoring and denying what is real, and it's going to kill you maybe.
Well, but I mean, it's just natural that we do that. I mean, I blew my knee playing volleyball about a month and a half ago.
Okay.
Did I go to the doctor about it? Did I do treatment for it? No, I didn't. I've just been putting an ice pack on it at night when I get home and it's sore.
Were you not concerned about it?
Of course I was concerned.
Are you afraid of doctors?
Nope.
Why did you not?
A lazy procrastinator.
Okay.
But you know, because life gets in the way, right?
It does.
Like, you think, oh, I should phone the doctor about that, or do work, or go there, or do this, or right. have dinner, or...
Well, that's one of his lines
yeah.
in there was, you know, I thought I should go to the doctor, and then I thought I should have dinner.
yeah.
Dinner one.
Yeah.
And then he eats a sandwich that looks like it's made with raisin bread, which looks weird. Like, who makes a sandwich with raisin bread? Unless it's a chicken salad sandwich, I guess you could do that.
But see, that's a problem with something like that, because you have to telescope things so much, so you don't get that sense of stifling that you'd have with a girlfriend. That you know, that's there and you are blossoming into this new person. And there's this person who's just sort of that anchor from your past kind of keeping you in this one place where you don't want to be anymore. You want to be over there.
Yeah.
It's hard to show that in a film because you can't have that length of time. The same way with his illness, he just seems like a nut because he's not taking care of it. But you don't understand that this is taking place over time and he has normalized it into his life, right? Yeah. Rather than it being strange to him, it's totally normal. Mm-hmm. It's wrong that it's totally normal. But at this point, he has normalized it, right? So, I mean, the same way that an alcoholic will normalize being an alcoholic. So, or a drug addict will normalize being a drug addict. To us, from the outside, it looks terrible. It's just chaos and disorder and pain. But it's become their life for them. And, you know, all those things they've just learned to deal with in different ways, whether it's excuses or...
You're also always you. And it's like when you're watching someone else, you can see the thing, but you're you.
Yeah.
And so there's also a little bit, I think, that you think, well, I can control this. Like, I don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, this is me. If I just get my shit together, then it's going to be fine. And then, as you say, life gets in the way, as in, like, you just have other stuff to do during a day. So when are you going to deal with your big problem? Yeah. That's a big point. But I liked Marc Maron's character in there. That mm-hmm. was a lot of comics. It's just like, aren't you married? Yeah, I'm not. I'm married out here.
yeah.
Yeah, he's not road married.
Yeah.
It's just it's also very weird too because
but he's not a bad guy at the same time. He's supportive.
Isn't he?
Well, he's not a bad guy.
He is a bad guy.
Why?
I think he's a bad guy. Because he's basically
Birbiglia is a bad guy too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And this is the devil telling you advice, right? This is the guy sitting there because he, you know, the Marc Maron character, you know, lives his life in a certain way and has justified his life in a certain way. And this is how he is.
Yeah.
And the road allows you to live your life in that way. But that does not mean, as you were saying, that it's right. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be on his side because it's not right.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be just road married, you know, unless your wife is cool with that. And you actually do have that arrangement that so many people said they had, but the arrangement was just, I'm not going to tell you this is happening.
yeah.
That's the arrangement.
It's a good arrangement.
Yeah. It's like an iTunes contract. Mm-hmm. It's in there, but you signed, but you didn't read it all. But technically we're both agreeing to. So when he's saying to the guy, no, you can fuck around on the road. You know, when he's saying that, no, he's not a good guy. That is not a thing a good guy says, because that thing will end up with another person in tears, mm-hmm. in deep, deep pain. So even though he's charming, well, he's not good.
What I mean is that he's not like a total asshole,
right? What would make a person a total asshole in that situation?
If he's a dick to Birbiglia, right? If he's like this kind of standoffish comedian who has no good advice for him, doesn't...
Okay, he does give good advice for the stand-up set,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
But you can't almost like... Here's the thing. It's like a musician to another musician almost cannot give advice. Like if someone's playing guitar, then mm-hmm. the other musician, as much of a dick as they might be, if they can see a way to improve that simply, they have to say it. And the same thing with a comedian. It's like you have to go up to the other comedian and just go...
Do you have to?
You do.
All comedians do that?
Generally, yeah, pretty much. It's a need. Hmm. Like if you see someone who's got a bit and you've got a tag for it that you think could help, it doesn't matter how you feel about that. I've had people come up to me and I've gone up to them and we have not liked each other in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. But you fucking have to do it. Because
names,
you,
please?
It's like a...
No,
it's
okay.
Like it's like an OCD thing. It's just like, oh, I can just see that there, and you know what? That I just need to plug that in. I just need to put the plug in that hole, and so you can see the bit, and you need to tag it. Or if someone asks you for advice, you need to give it. There's just this thing on the road, and also as comedians on the road, you're bonded in a certain way.
Okay.
It's us versus them.
Yeah.
We're from here, they're from there.
Yeah.
It's not, again, over time you lose that, and you should lose that. But I can see where he was then. how that was.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think, yeah, I don't think the Marc Maron character is in any way
a good guy. Okay. I stand corrected.
The other thing about him is this is a guy coming up to him who admires him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting something from this. He's not just being the, I'm going to help you, buddy.
Yeah.
He's the, this guy's feeding my ego need. And so is the girl who's going to sleep with me, who I'm going to regret sleeping with probably in the morning and feel empty inside.
Yeah.
And, ugh, you know, it's just... it's just need. It's this fucking need. And it's a shame because you really should just be working on your act when you're out there. But there's so many addictions that can get you when you're out there on the road. Holy shit. It's just like, you know, I've just seen so many people just turn completely to drink or to... Here's the other thing when you're on the road. You usually end up on the same circuit as strippers.
Okay.
And so you end up seeing the same strippers all the time, too. And eventually you'll just bond and just like, you're not going to sleep with a stripper if you're single. I mean, this is someone who makes a living, who is so beautiful that they take their clothes off for money. And people go, oh, I would give anything to sleep with you. And this is someone going, I'm really bored. Do you want to screw around? Yeah, you're going to. Because you're like on the road and you're lonely and you're hundreds of miles from home and you've got nothing else to do and there's five channels on the TV. Yeah, you're going to. And then you get really addicted to that kind of thing too. And it just gets real dark real fast. Hmm. Unless you really, really prepare for it.
Fellas, doesn't that sound kind of appealing?
But the appealing thing is when you are like he is doing, actually communicating yourself through your art and people are responding, that's an even bigger high. But you can get distracted by the other highs. But the bigger high and the one that's harder to work for is that one where like you're actually talking about your life and people are going, yeah, agree and laugh and acknowledge and justify you. And yeah, that feeds you in a much more nutritious, that's the fruits and vegetables. And the other one is your sugary soda drinks. So you've got to like just work on your high fiber act. And you know, have a sweet once in a while if you want, if it's not hurting anybody. But yeah, be careful out there is what I'm saying. But yeah, the film itself isn't a perfect film because I think it is a little too This American Life-y.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does take you out of it at times, and it clearly was a one man show. And it in the same way that if you watch like a Shirley Valentine or a My Big Fat Greek Wedding or whatever, there's things that happen in it that you go, this would have been great on stage.
Okay.
And I know you've kept it.
Yeah.
But
because I got a laugh.
Yeah, and again, it is. But the thing I like that he does that the other ones don't acknowledge is when you're actually talking to the audience, you know, acknowledging the relationship we have, and like, yeah, you're on my side. That's an interesting thing for like almost any movie. It's just like,
yeah,
I don't know if I should be on your side. It was like when in Friday the 13th, but Nightmare on Elm Street, when Freddy Krueger started talking to the camera and just making jokes directly at the audience, like, we're not on your side, man. You're a child rapist. Fuck off. Get back to the killing. But we're
that's right.
Hoping...
We'll watch the killing, but we don't want to be intimately involved
We're not on board. I'm not, you know, in Evil Dead, the raping tree doesn't turn to us and go, you like it, huh? It's like, no, wait, hold it. I'm paid money to see it, but let's not put me on side with the raping tree.
He turns and looks at the audience and says, my bark is worse than my bite.
Can you believe this?
We're getting to the root of the problem, people.
She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in Dutch. The new Evil Dead trailer makes me not want to see it, though. I think it'll be good for people that like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like horror movies of that ilk. You'll enjoy that film.
How about this?
But I find this
really intense.
I find the first one terrifying.
It is because you fill in a lot of blanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They take some pauses.
There's lots of pauses in that film for you to sit and worry.
It's like I've seen a little bit of the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre films.
In 3D?
No, though that one is a direct sequel actually to the original, where it's not a remake. It's not a sequel to the remake, apparently.
Okay.
But yeah, the original takes a lot of time.
It does.
And when stuff happens,
it's. But it's kind of funny, too, that movie. Like, it's not just all grisly horror.
It's a movie.
Moments. Yeah.
And with some chainsawing in it.
Yes.
It's not...
Yes. Well, speaking of Mike Birbiglia, I was watching a movie last night. It was a mistake to watch a movie that was funny with my back, because whenever I laughed, my back cramped up, and it was incredibly painful.
And your wife smacks you on the back every time she laughs.
And I made a dumb joke, because we also watched a bit of the first episode of Breaking Bad, which I'd never seen. So we just thought, oh, that's... see what it's like.
Starts off very well.
It is a good show.
Yeah, but I think it's starting off with a guy in his underpants driving in a
Winnebago. Yeah.
Winnebago. Yeah, yeah. It was like, oh, all right, I'll give this another 5 minutes. Mm-hmm, that's how you start a thing. All right.
Yeah. But I turned to my wife and said, oh, he made a meth, which is a dumb joke. So then I pretended I was going to start explaining it to her. I was like, well, you see what I did there? Like, you know, there's expression, he made a mess. And then I started explaining that. I started laughing. Then my back cramped up and it hurt so much. I started to tear up. So that made me laugh even harder. Oh, that was pain. I paid for that silly joke. But we were watching this film that Mike Birbiglia played a hotel clerk in called Cedar Rapids.
Okay, I have not seen that.
It has Ed Helms in it.
That's right.
It is of the Anchorman Hangover kind of movies.
Seem more grounded than Anchorman. Seem more in reality.
It's sort of in reality. That's my problem with these films, though, is that they pretend to be a real movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, they pretend to be about reality.
Right.
The 40-Year-Old Virgin and stuff also suffer from this. They pretend that they're part of reality, but you're watching the film, and no one is acting like a real human being.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the things they're doing, the way they're talking to each other, mostly in the film. There were parts of it that I enjoy quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's tons of...
Sorry, I smacked the...
Carefully, those cost money.
I was laughing so hard, I cracked my back.
Broke your back. There's just moments in it where you're just thinking, well, that's not how someone would talk in that situation, or no one acts that way.
Nope. Like,
and this whole thing of the child man... that's kind of taken movies by storm, that you have this innocent character who has to grow by becoming this hard-drinking, drug-taking, rip-snorting guy who, you know, breaks all the rules, and you're just kind of, what? What is this about?
Is this new, though? Is the child man a new character?
I think I don't know. It's not something I remember before.
How about like a Jerry Lewis? Wasn't he that in every movie?
Yeah,
and
but
then
his
he
characters,
had to mature up a little bit.
A little bit, but his characters aren't about becoming a taken drinking guy.
No,
or,
but it's like you're the
or a womanizer,
child man,
or,
so now you got to be the CEO of the company and you got to learn how to woo the ladies much as you could. You couldn't like be snorting coke, you know, in the 50s, obviously.
That's different. I mean, let's take an obvious movie that would kind of follow that, like Big, where you have a person who actually is a child in a man's body. And that is about maturing or growing into a... Well, but it's also about people learning from him.
True.
And they're changing the way that they look at the world.
I'm going to go the most obvious one with Jerry Lewis, Nutty Professor, where he becomes, you know, the swinging...
He's a dual, yeah.
Yeah, he becomes the swinging, drinking, you know, guy.
But
so he does have to
But that's the
get
bad
there.
Guy in the movie, though.
Is he really the bad guy?
Yeah.
But doesn't he get a little bit out of that guy? Like, shouldn't he be a bit more
a
like
little
that
bit,
guy?
A little bit. Of course... You shouldn't be a
isn't,
totally
isn't the moral
stuck up.
Always happy medium?
Yes,
isn't it,
it
always
should be.
Don't be this
yes, it should
to
be.
The most, don't be that to the this.
Yes, it
you know,
should
it's
got
to be that.
The other thing about the film is it has John C. Reilly in it. And when I was watching, I was thinking, is he turning into a Hanna-Barbera character? Because the way he talks.
I think he was in the Hair Bear Bunch.
Okay. Have you heard how he talks now? He has this kind of weird, it sounds like a Hanna-Barbera character.
I would do an impression of him, but Paul F. Tompkins does such a good one that I do not want to do it.
Do that kind of thing that he does with his voice when he talks. Like, it's just kind of weird. Like,
yeah.
It's not natural. And I was watching, I was thinking, gee, I wish he'd do a drama. Just like do a serious film.
He does every so often.
Does he?
Yeah,
like
he
what
does.
Movie?
Well, if I
name
could look
one
up,
for me.
Oh, God. If I could look up internet movie
if you
database.
If you were allowed to do
isn't
that,
isn't he
could.
In the one?
No, he's not. You're thinking of John T. Reilly.
What? Isn't he in that one with Mark Wahlberg, the porno one, Boogie Nights? Isn't he
that's
in that?
That's a long time ago. Yeah, he's really good in that film, but that's from a long time ago.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I mean.
You
like,
asked
what
me to be, the name
well,
of
yeah,
drama movie.
But I want it when
I
was
named
recent.
One, and now you're angry at me.
I'm not angry
There's
at you.
No
I'm
winning
furious
with you,
at you,
Daddy.
I'm furious.
There's no winning with you. You know what
I'm
I think happened, by
I'm
the
a
way.
Dad figure for
I
you.
Think you're, I think one of your daughters stepped on a crack, broke your back.
Intentionally.
I
don't doubt it.
This abusive relationship, making them watch Breaking Bad.
Lisa and I watched it. So yeah. The girls good.
And then,
Mary's still ensconced in season four or something of Lost.
And your wife went, there's not as much breakdancing in this as I would have expected.
We only have Netflix for a month.
Oh, just keep getting it.
So Amelis is having to watch all of Lost, all seven seasons of Lost in a month.
You should stop her just before the last episode
I'm
ends.
Going to. I'm going
to. Come to the party.
I'm going
what
to cancel
party, Father?
It. I'm going to cancel it. The problem is, if I start liking Breaking Bad, I'm going to have to keep on paying for this stupid Netflix.
Wow, that's terrible. $8 a month.
I know. It's a lot of... How times it by 12. How much is it then?
How much is it then?
Yeah.
Times it by 12. It's one can do that.
It's $96. $76. Almost $100 a year.
Okay. $76 is not $100.
It's not that much.
It's really not at all.
It's 12 times 8. Oh, you said 12 times $8, right?
Yeah. 12 times $8.
$96.
$96. Yeah. Oh, you want to do it that way.
$96. Yeah, I want to do it properly. I want to do the correct math.
Listen, you don't
not
get the
new math.
Do you not get the $20 discount?
No, I don't.
Jesus. Why do you keep doing this to me? All fucking random math through the damn thing. You know what?
What if it was $14 a month? What would it be then?
It would be times shut 12. Your fucking yap hole is what it would be.
12 times 14, what would that be?
I don't know. How poor are we, Father? Well, it would be one
we
movie.
We keep horses.
You know what? Okay, but I'm saying
do you know how much horses eat?
I don't know.
Okay, look at your cat food bill.
Yeah?
Times it by 1 million. Then you have an idea of what it costs to have horses.
I don't think you know what horses eat if you think it's a million times what that is. What are you feeding them, gold?
Yes.
I feed them pure gold.
You feed them pure gold, and gold goes in their mouth, poo comes out their bum.
Netflix is less a month than one movie, going out and seeing one movie.
It looks so good, though, when you go to the theater.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes they don't light it enough. Speaking of things that we said we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Comedians.
In cars.
Drinking coffee.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, sir. By the way, why don't you explain what it is?
Oh, okay. Well, it's a web series that Jerry Seinfeld produced, I assume. There's no credits for it. But
you're right, he did.
He did produce it. Okay.
And he also produced The Marriage Ref.
Oh, did he? Was that a success?
No.
Okay. I think he has a lot of money to throw around. But anyway, so on the show, it's...
I don't think he invests his own money in it. I think he goes...
Well, that's even better.
I think he goes, I'm Jerry Seinfeld. Would you like to put some money into this?
I don't think he says
and
that.
And people go, yes, sir, Mr. Seinfeld.
I don't think he says... I think he says, I'm Jerry Seinfeld. And would anyone like to put some... Who wouldn't want to put some money in this?
That is a good John C. Reilly impression.
Hey, everyone.
It's John C. Reilly.
I'm here. I'm the crazy character in the movie. I kind of talk like Bobcat Goldthwait.
Like, what's happening to your voice, John?
Do a drama. Not Boogie Nights.
He did.
He did that a long time ago.
What was the one that he did recently where it was there was a child with John? Yeah, it was Jonah Hill.
E.T., the sitter.
And Jonah Hill had a weird relationship with his mom.
Cyrus.
Yeah, that was not a comedy, was it? Was that a drama?
Based on the character Miley Cyrus.
Yes. And her father, Billy Ray Bob Thornton.
Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yes. That's on the Disney XD channel.
Billy Ray Montana.
For Extra Bad.
Do you know,
all those Disney shows, terrible.
Well, my children were forbidden to watch Hannah Montana. Or
any Disney shows.
They were, however, allowed to watch Family Guy.
I get that. The only one I would say, oh, geez, and this is really on the edge. It's like we watched a bunch of them because we were pitching some stuff to the network. Wizards of Waverly, not as bad as the rest.
No, it was okay.
Yeah.
The other ones, the way everyone spoke to each other.
Yeah.
Just horrible. Like,
but Wizards of Waverly, you go like, I buy this as a family.
Mm-hmm.
I buy this as a family. That's okay. But yeah, the rest are just like, we got to get laid. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
That.
What are you doing? Well, actually, Dan Savage wrote a good a column about like shows. He was similar. He went like, my son will never watch this one show. And it was The Sweet Life with Zach and Cody.
Yeah, it's a terrible show.
Because there was one kid who was basically just like doing all this sexual innuendo about a girl who I think he was related to. Like it was his cousin or something.
No.
Even.
Oh, there's no relations.
There was something. I'll put up the article.
There were no relations. It was a Disney show.
It was, and he was like just being so mean to his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
was,
oh yeah, they're totally mean to each other.
You know, and
Dylan and Cole Sprouse, the twins who played.
Yeah, so it was like they were real shitty to each other. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of jokes about like, you know, you're a big sissy, and basically all but calling him a fag. And then like a lot of, you know, boy, I'd like to do da 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 to her, and it's like, how old are you?
Yeah.
And what's going on? And this is like, and so it just like crossed all the various Rubicons and he just went, nope, my kid's never watching this.
Well, for me,
I don't
it was...
mind. And again, he was similar. It was like, I wouldn't mind them watching a smart show that had some cussing and some nudity, but not, not this show because one, it's dumb. Two, it's like just sexist and like the whole list.
Well, I'm sure they watched it when I wasn't home, but they weren't allowed to watch it when I was there. But it came, I was in the landing and I was hanging some pictures. And so I couldn't see the show. I could just hear their voices talking to each other.
Right.
And it was so obnoxious sounding
mm-hmm.
that I just came upstairs and said, you know what? Turn it off. I never want to see this show on again. Just turn it off. Turn something else on. I'm not saying you can't watch television. I just don't want you watching this show.
Now, let me just
And I explained why.
Yeah.
I didn't say it like that. I just said, and here's why. And I just went through my list of complaints that I had developed while I was standing on the landing listening to
you. You didn't just do dad voice, which is like, you're goddamn turn off this. And kick something over. Goddamn, we're going to slam.
Get out of my chair.
We're stepping on your back, father.
No, I just came upstairs and I said, you know, I don't appreciate the way everyone's talking to each other on this show. This is not how a family should speak to each other. And this is not how friends should speak to each
yeah,
other.
That's right.
You idiots.
Sorry, I took your joke.
Yeah.
Stepped on your punchline.
You
apologize.
Stepped on my crack and you broke my back and my heart.
Stepped on your wise crack.
And broke my heart.
Aww.
And so, yeah.
That sounds like a Miley Cyrus song.
The reason I say that about Family Guy is because there was a friend of the girls was there one day and she wanted to watch Hannah Montana. And they said, oh, we're not allowed to because I was there. And so they put on Family Guy. And she said, you're not allowed to watch Hannah Montana, but you're allowed to watch Family Guy? And I thought to myself, that is kind of odd, but it's just Family Guy is different in tone.
I've told you this story, but I'll tell you again really quickly. It was like one time when I was, I think, 15, and I wanted to see the new Monty Python movie. I couldn't see it because it was 18. Meaning of Life. And I wanted to see it, but it was 18 or older and couldn't see that. So I
it was just restricted. There was no 18 and older then, but anyway. Okay
restricted movie, but they wouldn't let me in.
Yeah, they
were too young.
Yeah.
So I had to go see a movie because I'm downtown. What am I going to do, not see a movie?
Mm-hmm.
So I saw the next movie over, which was 14 up, and it was Spring Break, which was nothing but titty comedy a go-go.
Yeah.
And it was just like, okay, that's what it felt like to me, which is like, I understand that technically, the Disney stuff is technically for the right age group, but you know what? The Family Guy stuff is smarter and more respectful to the audience, even though it's, you know, very disrespectful in its
disrespectful to chickens.
Yeah. Chicken. Yeah. He does a lot of choking the chicken. You know what that means.
Oh yeah.
We get it.
It's anti-Christian.
We get it.
It's totally about Jesus Christ.
Right. Okay. You'll have to explain that to me.
I'm taking it the wrong way?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sensitive.
I know that Peter was the Rock? Paul was the Rock. The Rock played Paul.
Bob Seger was the Rock.
Dwayne Johnson is the Rock.
Can you smell what the Rock is cooking?
Oh, chicken. That all makes sense.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That was from Kenny Rogers' Rock and Roosters.
There
Look,
you go.
Folks, we've really gone off track.
So, by the way,
what we're saying is Disney, smarten up.
Yeah.
Like, I know what they're doing. They're taking a sitcom. They're basically taking Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And we're going, what if we did Golden Girls with teenage girls? Yeah. Let's just do
and
this.
And not improve the quality of it at all. Oops. Not improve the quality at all. Just take the whole show.
Well, it makes sense for old ladies.
Let's take Designing Women and make it into a show for kids.
Yeah. But like, again, like older women, they're horny and they've been through a lot and they've been through many husbands.
Yeah.
But like a girl,
they've been through many paws.
Very good. But like a 10-year-old girl or 11-year-old girl should not be wisecracking in that same way. I get that they want to pretend to be adults, but come on, smarten up. Smarten up, world. Okay. Jerry Seinfeld, comedians enjoy tea, eating crumpets.
And crumpets. They enjoy. The show is basically he gets a car.
One of his own cars, probably.
It often isn't. I was looking at. They often seem to be from. They're often credited to a car company at the end of the show.
He enjoys a car.
So, but he gets a car, a special kind of car, and usually they're kind of related. I think he chooses them sort of related to his guest because he'll pick up a friend. They'll go and have coffee, have a conversation, which is edited down into a nice to a nice segment about 8 to 10 minutes long.
Yeah,
and. They're actually really, some of them are really good. Some of them are okay.
Yeah.
Are really good.
Let me just interrupt you to say, like, if you're talking about picking a car, when they had the guy, Ted Nancy, I think, did you watch that one?
Yeah. They picked the comedy car for him.
Yeah. Like, that guy had a rough time getting in and out of that car. That was just
was a Porsche.
Pretty mean.
It was a Dutch police car that was a Porsche convertible, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I agree with Seinfeld because he says, who thought it was a good idea? Like, what person besides the guy driving the car thought that the Dutch police force needed to have Porsche convertibles? What's interesting is it has a little piece that sticks up from the window frame, the front window frame, with the light on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very strange car. Like, I don't know if it was like a demonstration car or like a promotional vehicle.
I don't know. It was neat though. It was a neat car. Yeah, I was like, you get Porsches?
Well, I'm such a car nerd that for the Brian Regan episode, they show. The first thing they show the car is the steering column, which has a kind of serrated or almost looks like a spring, or a conduit pipe, you know what I mean? Like, so it has kind of loops.
I do, but describe it to our audience.
Serrated, so it's bumpy all around. As soon as I saw that, I went, oh, it's a Challenger. Because I know exactly what the steering column looks like on a Challenger. So I was kind of excited. I was like, finally, not a foreign car. Because every other show basically is him driving Porsches, Volkswagens, Austin Healey's, a Rolls Royce. Many Volkswagens. He drives a 52 Volkswagen, which is an interesting car because it has the semaphore signals.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The actual pieces of wood that drop down from either side to indicate which way you're turning. And then it has the old split window in it, which is quite kind of curious. But he also drives a Carmangia, and then he drives a Volkswagen microbus that's been converted into a truck with a fold-down back bed on it, so it can be a flatbed.
It's good. It's good car porn. If you just love
cars. Yeah, well, I do love cars.
Watch it on the best best settings you can, and just it's on Crackle.
Yeah,
it's on Crackle online, or you can also get Crackle on your like PlayStation or some other things. You can go that way and watch it on your proper TV.
Not on my Blu-ray. But
it's a similar situation to Netflix on PlayStation. You can get that as well for free and watch the things.
You get Netflix for free on your?
Well, not for free, but you can get Netflix, the service.
You get the installation.
For free, but Crackle you do get
the
for
app,
free.
I guess the application.
Crackle is free, and you get to watch free movies as well.
Nice. So
lots of loving shots of coffee as well.
Yes.
To the point of it being a bit distracting.
I don't really like coffee, so I don't even like the smell of it.
Well, you don't have to smell it on TV.
Which is weird because I love Coffee Crisp, the chocolate bar.
Mm.
But I'm not a fan of coffee.
No, I understand.
Please explain.
I don't know. I've started drinking coffee.
I want a 500-word essay.
I've started drinking coffee over the last 2 years just because I wanted a different drink.
I noticed that. I took it as a terrible
betrayal. What am I supposed to drink? Water? I get cold. You get so cold drinking water.
I don't like warm drinks, so.
Okay.
Like, I don't like hot chocolate tea or coffee. It's hot cider.
Wow, okay.
Don't like any of that.
Mulled wine.
Martin Mull.
Martin Mull,
no.
Really? Even early Martin Mull? You don't like Fernwood
Tonight?
Well,
he is a bit of a cold character, so yeah, I do kind of like Martin Mull.
Do you like his art collection? Pretty impressive.
Does he have an impressive art collection?
Pretty good.
Really?
Yeah. Not Steve Martin level. We've gone off topic. Back to the show.
So what's interesting about what I like about the show, though, is that it's people about our age talking about things.
Mm.
Because, you know, I'm at the age now where I pretty much agree with all the people who are my age.
Right. Dave is 75.
When they say
Dave is Mel Brooks' age.
When they say things about me, well, yeah, there is Mel Brooks. But more I'm thinking like there's an episode with Colin Quinn.
Yeah.
And they go to Brooklyn. And it's fun for them to go there because Colin Quinn grew up in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But he grew up in my view of Brooklyn, which I think we talked about when Tucker Stone was on the show, which is essentially you can't walk 2 feet without getting stabbed to death. You know, that's my view of Brooklyn because I grew up with that idea of New York as warriors, as Serpico, as, you know, it's this messy, dangerous place where you just don't go out at night.
Yep.
Because if you do, it's Death Wish all over again, baby. So it's
Death Wish, of course, meaning Jeff Goldblum will attack
dance. He'll dance in a supermarket.
If you don't think you can take Jeff Goldblum in a fight, don't go out.
Don't go out there. Well, now he's pretty bulked up, though. Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, but back then he was like, he looked like a sweat hog. Like all the people in Death Wish, you know, looked like the sweat hogs came in.
Do you know what he was like? He was just like a string bean.
Yeah.
Or a 10 speed.
Or a brown shoe.
Yeah.
By the way, these are old references.
This is totally for, well, that's what we're talking about. But it's interesting.
Mel Brooks just called and went, that's a pretty old reference.
So it's interesting when they're talking about what it used to be like. And, you know, Quinn is kind of shaking his head at the reality of it now with all these hipsters, you know, with their coffee houses and their little, you know, this little world they've made for themselves there. And I do like what Quinn says, which is, you know, they made it. You know, this is property developers who are letting these people move in. So they take the knives and then, you know, then when the area gets settled down, then they can start developing the properties. Then the rich folk can move in from wherever.
Yep.
You know, because there already is that kind of stuff happening there with... Oh, I can't remember the names of places, but, you know, in Brooklyn, there are areas that have kind of gentrified and pushed the renters and all those people out up farther away from those areas.
That seems to be a standard thing.
That's the way it works in cities, yes.
Yeah, it's happening here.
But it's weird because New York, it didn't happen for a long time, probably because of weird things like rent control and things of like that created these artificially low rents that you could have these seedy neighborhoods because no one, you know, those kind of people didn't get pushed along.
I have relatives that have an apartment that's amazing. That's amazing that costs nickels.
Yeah.
Nickels.
Because it's rent control.
Rent control. Beautiful.
And if they moved out, the next people that came in would not get it at that.
When you hear rent control, you kind of go like, where's your free market now?
But I mean, probably New York of the 1970s was an example of why that doesn't work very well as an economic model. You know, to not allow people. Well, I mean, it was a bit of a mess, wasn't it, New York?
I guess so.
But the question that they ask in the show, right, is what's better? The soul-deadening Disneyfied Times Square that they have now as New York.
Yeah.
Or the knife in your face of the past.
Well, we've got that just down the street here on Hastings, right? Like, I look at old pictures of Hastings Street, and it's so beautiful and neon-y, and it's like so much life and color. But then again, it was stabby as fuck, you know? I mean, it was...
Well, I wouldn't say it was stabby, but it was definitely
it got
rough.
Kind of stabby.
It was a rough place.
It was a rough... Yeah, it was a rough bit of business, yeah.
But all of it was rough. I mean, that's where the I mean, they still work there, but not in the same way they... I mean, in those days, if you were a longshoreman... You know, if you worked offloading the boats and stuff like that, you worked.
Yeah.
You just didn't sit in a crane and take big giant containers off of ships. That's easy. Those guys, they did heavy physical labor, you know, and when they were done, they wanted to go have a drink. They wanted to wind down, whether that involved punching each other in the face or having a drink or whatever. And I mean, Vancouver was a working class town. I mean, most of Vancouver was factories, warehouses, lumber yards. The warehouse district, all the longshoremen, all the train yards and stuff that were here.
I think there was less places to get a drink and get laid. And like now, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. So it spreads it out a bit too. It's just like
there were lots of places you just didn't know about them because we did not go to Yale Town of that time period.
Yeah.
But there were cheap bars and stuff where you could go and play pool and have a beer.
Oh, absolutely.
If you were willing to take the risk that people weren't going to like you there.
Right, right. But then now I think there's more just general, you can get it anywhere, you know, kind of situation. So it spreads it out and smooths it out. And there you go. But back to the show. Do you like the conversations?
Oh, I do like the conversations if they interest me, and like
they
that
very,
conversation.
They're very different. Yeah, yeah. What do you think of the? Because we're kind of running out of time. What do you think of Michael Richards one?
Oh, I really enjoyed that because it's something that Jerry Seinfeld said.
Because you asked me before, like, do they talk about the thing?
They do talk about the thing, but they talk about it in a really interesting way because Jerry Seinfeld says something that is really deep as an entertainer. Because he is very wise. I would like to. Mm-hmm. I'd almost like to just hear him talk about comedy. I mean, I know there's a film Comedian.
Yeah.
But even more of that would be interesting for
him. Did you ever see the talk that he did with Louis C.K. and Ricky Gervais and Chris Rock?
I watched a little bit of it, but I felt it was too driven by Ricky Gervais, and I didn't enjoy where he took it in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, because
I don't think he had that much experience as a stand-up.
That's exactly right. You had the three, I don't want to say Zen masters, but you had the three people who had been through all this stuff that he was just, I'll tell you what it's like. And it's just like, hey, first year of college, what's up? Well, we got to make changes. It's got to matter, man. And it's just that's right, buddy. Like there's one point where Ricky Gervais is talking about, I think, a fart joke and just went, well, you can tell a fart joke, but you can't just tell a fart joke. It's got to mean something. And Chris Rock goes, not done.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, yeah. And then the other two are like, no, it doesn't. Not at all. It can be its own thing.
Of course.
And they can see the purity of a joke for a joke's sake.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to have that protective bubble of
ideology behind it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just like it's protecting yourself from the audience. It's not taking the full risk. If you just throw a joke, it's like comedians that just tell a joke, but then they have to like throw a little thing at the end, like your safety.
Yeah.
You know. But if you just throw a joke out there, it's dangerous. And these guys know it and they're okay with it. They're not afraid of bombing, I think, in a way that Ricky Gervais would be. Like he would.
But also to me, and I enjoy The Office and stuff like that, but as a conversationalist, he's not that interesting. Like his segment, what's good about it is how scared he is in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Not really their conversation
at
the restaurant.
One of the few times that he feels real.
Yeah. Like in the restaurant, he doesn't have that much to say. That's interesting to me.
But I can see that.
Whereas the Michael Richards one is really interesting. Not only is Michael Richards interesting in the restaurant, he's interesting the whole time.
Yeah.
The detour they take to Jay Moore's house, where he claims it's Sugar Ray Robinson's place. That's amusing.
Where he dresses up in the disguise, and then there's a guy who looks just like him that's there.
And then they have fun with that.
Yeah.
And he's really nervous about meeting people. And so they make a point at the end of it of having them meet a family and do their thing and just be real for a moment and give some people their time. And it's not a big deal, Michael.
That's right.
You don't have to sweat it. Because you don't have to wear a wig. You don't have to wear sunglasses. Just walk around.
Yeah.
Some people may come up to you and shake your hand. Most people won't. That's life.
Well, I can sort of see with like the Ricky Gervais, if you grew up in England, you can see how they treat celebrity there. And like with the papers and the tabloids and whatever, if you have any degree of fame, they're cruel as fuck.
They are.
So I could see how you build up that.
But you are too.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what you do. You build it.
Yeah.
You shove it back.
Yeah.
You know, right now.
But I mean, you're part of it. You grow up with it. It's not that you don't suddenly arrive at that. You spend your whole life reading that sort of stuff in the papers.
Right. So when
you're famous, it's not that big a surprise.
Right. So
I don't
when
think.
You come here and it's not, and that kind of thing isn't here, you still have that defensiveness. Mm-hmm. I find that when I look at a little bit of Piers Morgan, because he was really obviously in the thick of that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so when you see here, and he just really attacks people yeah. too fucking hard, yeah. way too hard. And it's like, all right, no one's throwing punches. We're all going to settle
we
down.
Know you were the editor we're just... of the world, the Daily Mirror, whatever.
Yeah, that's right. You did some bad shit. Okay, that's fine. And I think I think you see Ricky Gervais, and he's still fighting a battle that isn't around anymore. And Michael Richards, I can see like him, that guy got, you know, basically had all the love in the world thrown at him, all the money in the world thrown at him. And then he had all the hate in the world thrown at him for a period of time. And
well, just talks about it, and he's really honest, which is really great.
Right. But I can, but I always.
Before that, it's something that Jerry Seinfeld says.
Please.
Which is, when you in your art, whether you whatever comedy or whatever, you have to be selfless. It's not for you, right? It's for the audience. Mm-hmm. Like he says that to Michael Richards. And Michael Richards, that's when he starts talking about that. He goes, oh, that's so deep, you know? And he says, because in that moment, it was about me. You know, I didn't say, you know what? I'm not having a very good show. I'm not, you know, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. He got offended. He got on the defensive. And then it turned into that situation where he got angry because he was, you know, his feelings were hurt. And so he's lashing out. That's not what it should be about, right?
Okay. Well, I can get a bit more into that, but go ahead with your point and then I'll go. Unless you want me to just go into
If you want, sure. Yeah. Well, you're going to stop me.
I guess I did
stop you. By stopping me, you want to make a comment.
I apologize. Well, no. Here's the thing. Like when you see Michael Richards and what he's doing, if you take it out of context, you just go, what a horrible bunch of racial slurs. This is terrible.
Yeah.
What have you. But then if you look at people dealing with hecklers, which is what he had actual hecklers, you come at them with the full force of everything you have and that, at least if you're someone like a Paul F. Tompkins, you don't. Mm-hmm. A Paul F. I'll wait till the siren goes by.
Take a drink, everyone.
Everyone, take a drink, a nice, refreshing drink. Paul F. Tompkins, his heckler line is, if I didn't know any better, sir, I'd swear you were trying to hurt my feelings. That's one way to go.
Yeah.
But if you're a Louis C.K., then you're calling the person a cunt, and you're saying everything about their parents, and you're saying everything about everything, and
it's a control thing.
You're unleashing in a way, and he just didn't have the control that a professional comedian had. You know, someone like a Louis C.K. could use those exact same words, but use them correctly, and you would go, "Ah, I see."
Yeah,
but. You know, he did not have the control, and so he was a guy with a gun that didn't know how to fire it. And
he knew how to fire it. He just didn't know how to aim it.
Right.
Yeah.
But he had seen enough comedy, obviously, to know that this is how you do this. And there you go. But you can't explain that in the context then of the real world afterwards. Yeah. Going like, well, I said, because even saying the words at a talk show afterwards.
Yeah.
It just seems wrong. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird thing. Like. For what people attacked him for saying, I don't think they were correct in doing so, because that is in the context and the world that he was in, that actually is a thing that you can do. Yeah. Anything has to be allowed within those walls, though he was not professional enough to be able to use it properly. And then it all went to fucking someone, you know, it was a perfect storm of bad shit that happened, but it was amazing how damaged he seemed by it.
Yeah.
But when you're saying like that you have to be selfless, I don't think completely selfless.
Well, no, there's always selfishness in your art. That's nature. It's your ego that's totally wrapped up in whatever you're doing, whether you're doing a podcast.
Also, people like
drawing title cards for a podcast.
You want to see, if you're watching a concert, you want to see the performer having a good time as well. Mm-hmm. Not so much of a good time that they're just playing songs that you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
You want to hear them play the hits as well.
Yeah.
But you don't want them to be just, hey guys, what do you want? What do you want to see?
Oh,
are we off?
I think my computer didn't get plugged in. Would you mind searching for the cord?
Oh, yes.
It's right there.
Okay.
Where'd it go?
There. It did not. Have we recorded anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then suddenly a battery warning came up. Thank you.
There we go.
Sorry, everybody. That was a bit of a languor there. That was a breather.
Right. It is a balance, though, between the performer, you know, what they want and what the audience wants. Mm-hmm. If you're too selfish, then you're a dick. And if you're too, hey, audience, what do you want? I'll do anything you want. What do you want? You want to hear all the hits? Here we go. Then you're a house band. Not a house band. Then you're like, you know, you're a band at a wedding just going through the thing. And
But I think it still has to tilt a little more in the audience's favor than in your favor.
Well, you're there too. You're there
as an entertainer. Your very definition.
Okay, you're there.
The very definition of you means that you are there for the audience.
Okay, but you're also there as an artist.
You were there as an artist and an entertainer. Yeah. I mean, it's different. You're not a painter.
And that's the balance.
I mean, a painter obviously doesn't have to please an audience.
Yeah, they do. Eventually they have
Eventually
to...
they do. But
otherwise,
I mean,
they're going to have an attic full of their own paintings.
Their paintings themselves do, but I just mean their performance. While they're performing, they don't have to. While they're painting,
well, a painter's performance is his art. Like, that's the final presentation as you put it out there. The musician's final performance is the song if he's not doing it, or she's not doing a live show.
Is a painter an entertainer?
Yeah, I would say so. Yes.
I know. I think you're stretching the definition.
Well, what would you say a definition of entertainment?
Well, performing for an audience and making them and entertaining them in some way.
Okay, if you've got a painting and it's hanging on a wall, and a person is like, people walk by and they enjoy that painting, is that not entertaining them?
No.
If it's a cartoon, if they do an animated cartoon, that is entertainment. If the pictures move, it's entertainment. If the pictures are still,
Would you call an animator working on his computer animating The Incredibles an entertainer?
Yeah, because they're creating entertainment.
No, I think you're stretching it.
No, well,
I'm not going to go with you.
All right.
I can't go with you.
Will you tell me? All right, let me say this.
I can't go with you that far.
Is the movie The Incredibles entertainment?
It is entertaining, yes.
Is it entertainment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
For it to be entertainment, it has to be created by entertainers, does it not?
So
can entertainment be made by someone who is...
The guy doing the sound on The Hangover is an entertainer.
Yes, he's working... Yes.
No, you're stretching.
No, I'm not stretching.
No, I can't go with you. Can't go there with you. I stopped. I got off your bus.
Okay, well, you're wrong.
Bing!
So something is... Okay, if the final product is art... Let's go with that instead.
Okay.
All right, let's go with that.
Art Garfunkel.
Your final product is art. Mm-hmm. Are all the people involved along the way to making that art, if it's a collaborative process, are they artists?
No.
They're not?
No.
The people who make art are not artists?
Not in that sense. Just the same way that if a book is art, the people who work in the printing press aren't artists.
Okay.
Why, you think they're artists or entertainers?
Yes,
the people
of course
who work
they are. Everyone that's involved in putting together art and making art.
No.
If your final product is art, then everyone involved in it is okay. Everyone at the end of a movie. If you're looking at a credit roll on a movie. Mm-hmm. All right. Aside from special thanks to and the union credits at the end and Kodak Film. Mm-hmm. Every one of those people to me is an artist. Every one of them. The gaffer, the best boy, the people that wrote the music, obviously, actors, the director, all those people. You know, I would say maybe,
what about the assistant?
Maybe not the caterer.
What about the assistant?
I'm going to go not the caterer.
What about the assistant to Mr. Cruise?
The assistant to Mr. Cruise. It depends what they do.
I just disagree with you. I just don't.
If the assistant
I won't go
to
that
Mr.
Far
Cruise. All right, here's the thing. If the assistant.
And I don't think those people you're talking about would consider themselves artists.
Wow. Okay.
I don't think the guy holding the boom mic would consider himself an artist.
I'm trying to think what the union is called. I think the word artist is probably in the title for the union. You don't think the boom person is an artist?
No, I don't think
you don't think
consider
the sound person is an artist. At what point does it become
the same
the
way?
Artist?
I don't think that the coach is an athlete. I don't.
No, the coach isn't an athlete.
Yeah.
No, but okay. But so, all right, you got the boom guy. Let's just break this down.
Just people who are facilitating.
Boom guy, not an artist.
Yeah.
Okay, and now it goes into, I wish I knew what the machine was. It goes into a mixer.
It's
the person
not an
who's
artist.
Mixer the sound, that person is not an artist. Now there's the sound editor.
The sound
is
editor,
that person an artist?
I could see there's art there, yeah.
So that person is an artist.
Because they're creating.
The editor.
They're creating something, yeah.
The person who is recording the stuff is not an artist.
No.
So a person who takes a picture, not an artist. The person who then edits that photo and makes it a certain look a certain way, they're an artist.
Photographers can be artists.
Photographers can be artists.
Of course
artists.
They can.
That's a still
That's
photo.
A silly thing.
Okay, but a painter is not. Okay, a painter is an artist.
A painter is an artist, yeah.
A painter is an artist.
But a person who makes puts a canvas together and staples it, not an artist. The person who makes paintbrushes, well, making paintbrushes is an art.
Okay.
There is an art there. There is a craft.
I don't think in the credit roll they have the person
but
who
can we
built
separate,
the camera.
Can we separate craft from art?
No. I don't think we can.
Okay.
I think there are distinctions between art and craft,
I want to separate making macrame owls from art.
Okay, fair enough. Hey,
with
everybody.
Beads for eyes.
What do you all think? What do you all think?
You all agree with
here's
me, right,
people? Here's the question. Are podcasts art?
Yes.
Okay.
What I... Here. I'm going to just... Here. I'll okay. separate it for you.
All right.
I'll
separate it for me. Separate it for me.
What I do when I take this home and edit it, that's not art.
Yes, it is.
No, it's just.
Well, then, how is the sound editor an artist, and you editing this is not art?
But they're creating a mix that actually has, you know, it's separate sound. It puts sound behind you, puts sound in front of you.
Okay.
It creates an ambiance to the film. Right?
You're making
the same way the musician creates an ambiance for the film by creating a score that reflects the movie, right? That reflects the emotions and things that are happening on screen. The sound designer does the same thing. So does the set decorator and the costume person. Those people are putting their art in service of creating the film.
Okay.
Different than the person holding the boom mic.
Okay. I'm going to say, let's go to the point that you made, though, about you editing this afterwards.
Okay.
You think the sound editor is an artist, and the sound editor is an artist because they make choices
that
affect the artistic...
Let me say it differently then, because I did kind of say it wrong. Me pushing the button to turn on the computer, that is not an artist. That is just a person turning on the machine.
Right.
All right? That is not art.
But you deciding what to leave in the show is art.
Everything. I guess
you've made that artistic choice.
Yeah, that is a choice. Yeah, editing is an art. So I won't say that.
So I'm right. Thank you so much for listening
I'm still separating.
Okay, you're still separating. Please separate the yolk from the white.
When I post it onto the website, that is not art. But my show description. Am I making the title card? That's obviously art.
Okay. But here's what you're doing. You're posting it onto a website that you have designed.
There's art in that.
Right. So you've already...
But the posting isn't art. But anyone could do that. I could get my daughters to do that.
Right. But you... Okay. But you have already... All right. You're posting to a site, though, that you have artistically designed. A show that you have named artistically. One that... And you're posting a show that you have done creatively.
Yeah.
Okay. You're saying this one aspect, this 1/100th of what you do.
Yeah.
I'm saying this bit isn't art. And I'm saying it's all part of the same process.
What I'm saying, though, is if there was a separate person pushing that button, he would not be an artist.
You know those plates... Where you have the food and the kids don't want the food touching, and so they have it separated. Okay.
Obsessive compulsive disorder?
Sure, let's go with that. I just think being a kid.
Okay.
But you don't want your cranberry sauce touching your mashed potatoes. I think there's no dividing for the most part, and everything bleeds into everything else. And when you're on a film set, here's what happens. Mm-hmm. Boom guy talks to director, who also talks to sound editor. They all talk and they discuss things. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are some boom guys that basically you could use a tree. That's fair. But there are also boom guys, and I'm saying guys, women as well can do boom work, and it's sexy when they do.
I don't know. They're not as tall as guys.
Filmmaking is a collaborative process, and you don't know where the bleed over and the leak over happens. It's all discussion. Like whenever I've been on a film set.
I think if you read a little thing called the auteur theory, then you know exactly who is responsible for making a great film.
Who is that?
The director. And no one else.
Well, I read a thing called the otter theory, which means we should all lie on our backs and hold hands and eat walnuts.
That's the cuter theory.
It's very, very cute. I've just found like when I've worked on like TV sets, there's no one I would say that has ever been on my crew that we have not asked for their feedback on and have not.
But you're working in a pretty small crew.
I've worked with CBC where there's been unnecessary people, where unions
are they contributing?
Yeah.
Unnecessary people are contributing too?
Yeah, they have because they're there.
They eat the donuts.
Well, it's because usually we have a fun set, right?
Yeah.
And because you have a fun set, people want to come where the laughing is.
Okay.
You know, so you come over and we encourage them to throw in with their knowledge what, you know, so the props guy who would normally be the guy that we'd just go, hey, go buy some twigs. You know, would come over and just go, you know, maybe I could da 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 da. And maybe it matters, maybe it doesn't. Maybe we take their advice, maybe we don't. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, on most film and TV sets that I've been on, everyone, it all bleeds to the point where you can't just go, you're just the gaffer. You gaff over there. You pull your damn cord. You know, everyone says a fucking thing. And admittedly, sometimes it doesn't, but it does enough that I would not go, you're not an artist. I stay with mine.
I won't go
okay.
with it.
Okay, and we're just going to say, how many films have you done?
How many films have I done?
And how many TV shows?
Does that matter?
As in, one of us has done those, and one of us has not.
That's your argument. You're now going to bully me.
That's a bullying?
Yeah, that's a bully argument.
I don't think that's a bully argument.
Yeah, it was.
If I was a firefighter and you were talking about firefighting, you're going like, let me tell you what it's like for the firefighters.
You could say the same thing to any movie reviewer then. You've made how many movies?
No, but a movie reviewer's job is to critique the final product. Uh-huh. What you're doing is you're defining the people. You're defining what people are.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm saying practically what I have seen.
Okay.
That is not true.
If you say so.
I do.
I still disagree with you.
That's right.
I'm not on your bus.
I'm sorry for bullying
you. I'm in a different
bus. I hope I don't have to take an anti-bullying workshop.
You do.
All right.
You do.
I got to really think about my feelings.
We have a union here.
Do we? Oh, fuck. Oh, it's annoying. But you ever want to get annoyed, just get involved with a Canadian union.
Okay, let's end the show as quickly as we can.
I'm sorry, my anti-union stance has disturbed Dave. I was like, what's the line? What's the line? Just like,
no, it's nothing to do with that. I just looked at the time.
Okay. Remember Jimmy Hoffa, everybody.
Remember Jimmy Hoffa.
All right. Yeah, we're doing two live shows coming up soon.
Two Live Crew. That's what we're changing our name to.
We are.
Yeah.
We were going to turn it to NWA, but we thought we'd get in trouble with the airline.
Yeah.
So we didn't want any of that.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Meters with Artists.
Huh? So we, on the 30th of this month, January, I'm going to be doing the Critical Hit Show at the Rio Theater. It's a live D&D show, Dungeons and Dragons. I do not know how to play Dungeons and Dragons still, but I've been doing it for a couple of months.
You can play one on stage.
I can play one on stage. Absolutely.
You're an artist.
And I want to throw out a happy birthday to Vicky Van. It's her birthday today.
Happy birthday, Vicky.
Who is my sister-in-law. We work together on films. She is fantastic. I consider her an artist. Dave, I don't know. I don't know if he would. I really don't know.
I'll have to think about it.
Let us know what you think.
So, yes, that's everything?
I think so.
I think we can sign off then.
All right. All right. Please do.
Well, dear sneaky friends, thank you for listening to our show. We appreciate it. We love you. And we also hate you.
What?
It's a complicated relationship. Goodbye, everyone.
It's an art. It's a craft. Okay, bye.
So long.